Senbeno, and welcome to the Halfway Project Podcast. Hello, everybody. Hi, cooks.
Senbeno.
Did you know what I was saying?
No, but I assume it's hello.
How'd you know that?
I don't know.
It is
lucky
hello.
Guess.
It's hello in Mongolian. And well, there's a reason for that, because today we're going to be talking about a memorable yet somehow lost love story between a Mongolian princess and a Korean king.
This is going to be a major throwback.
I think this is outside the scope of throwback. Throwback is like you scratch the disc and it goes back to the 70s. This is... beyond
this is like
throwback.
Time machine.
Yeah. Hey, we haven't been in our time machine in a while, have we?
No, it's been a minute.
Oh, yeah, why don't we just clamber on in? Clamber? That's the word. Clamber right on in. Clamber? No, I'm just second guessing myself. Let's get in our time machine.
That works.
And go all the way back to the Yuan Dynasty. This would be like 1270. I guess, 1271.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, so we're way back here. And we're going to introduce two characters who are going to appear in this love story. The first would be Queen Doguk, and the other would be King Gongmin of Korea. Queen Doguk, maybe you've heard that name, or maybe you've heard her Mongolian name, which was Borjigin Budashiri. Or you may have heard this extremely long name in Korean, bear with me. 인덕 공명자 예선 안휘의 노국 대장 공주.
Try to say it fast.
you say it fast first.
No. I'm struggling with the short one because there's a shorter version she's known for.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if I could say that.
Oh, what's
fast.
The shorter one?
It's 노국 대장 공주.
Yeah, not bad. 노국 대장 공주.
Yeah.
So those are other names for maybe you've heard about this, but we're going to call her Queen Doguk for today's purposes. So Queen Doguk was a Mongolian princess, and King Gongmin was a Korean king of Goryeo. Goryeo was the kingdom at that time. Let's focus, I guess, on Queen Doguk first. She was born, we're not entirely sure, but we do know that she died in 1365, March 8th, which I found was really specific. Especially for like way back then, and for a woman.
Mm-hmm.
But she was from the Yuan Dynasty and part of the Mongolian Borjigin clan. So maybe let's talk about the Yuan Dynasty, kind of to set the scene of what was going on now.
Okay, so the Yuan Dynasty was the ruling dynasty of China, and it was established by Kublai Khan, and he was a leader of the Mongolian Borjigin clan. Am I saying that correctly? Borjigin.
Let me look in my Mongolian dictionary.
So
I
you don't
say
know?
Yes.
Okay, so if anyone knows out there, please write to us and let us know if the pronunciation is correct. But so Kublai Khan was the leader of the Mongolian Borjigin clan, mm-hmm. and also the grandson of Genghis Khan.
Yeah, that's what most people think about when they think
sure.
about Mongolian leaders.
Right. And as many of us are aware, the Mongols ruled for many decades,
yeah.
thanks to Grandpappy Genghis Khan.
Yeah, I've never heard him referred to in that way, but I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Mongolian Empire was extremely vast and powerful at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't they have control of all over what is today modern China?
I think so, even? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in 1271, Kublai Khan, he officially established the Yuan Dynasty. He was the first non-Han Chinese dynasty to rule all of China. And the Yuan Dynasty did last for quite some time, but they did a lot of stuff. They formed political traditions of the Mongol people. He built schools, particularly for Confucian scholars, issued paper money, which, you know, at first I was like, is that such a big thing? But I guess it really is.
Sure. I mean, yeah. I mean, because the way we do currency is, you know, it hasn't always been done like that. You know, money and currency was more of a bartering thing or,
yeah, like here's,
you know,
10 seashells for
your iPhone or something. And I'm like, okay.
Oh,
yeah,
sure.
You know, those 10 seashells are valuable for me. Yeah. So, yeah, I guess that was a big thing. It's kind of like how we're in the digital age now. And, you know, just 30 years ago, you couldn't imagine paying for things on your phone. That's so it's true. Sort of a revolution of currency.
It is revolutionary. Or imagine if you wanted to buy land and then you had to literally bring horse cartfuls of cash, hard cash. So paper money was revolutionary.
Exactly.
He also endorsed policies that stimulated agricultural and commercial growth. They promoted scientific growth, cultural growth. They also protected the Mongol postal system, which I really liked that little aside. Because again, you also think like, come on, the postal system. But that was really big. Apparently, he was also big on pushing the Silk Road. So he was expanding outside to foreign visitors as well. And he invited Marco Polo to his own court.
Nice.
Marco Polo, as you know, he wrote a lot about this legendary wealth that he saw from the Yuan Dynasty, which inspired, by the way, Christopher Columbus, who read that and then in search for his wealth stumbled across North America.
Mm-hmm. He discovered it.
Oh, I know, right? He definitely discovered it. Well, Kublai Khan made the Yuan Dynasty. It was very, very powerful. And thanks to Kublai Khan, he created this custom where Yuan Dynasty princesses would marry Goryeo princes. Now, let's explain Goryeo. What was Goryeo?
Right. So Goryeo was founded in 918. So that's well over 1,000 years ago. And it was a Korean kingdom. So many of us have heard the kingdom Joseon. So Goryeo was the kingdom prior.
Yeah.
So there were like major periods of hundreds of years for a lot of these kingdoms. And so this was founded in 918. And this kingdom, Goryeo, resisted invasions from the Mongol Empire for nearly 30 years until the year 1258.
It's pretty significant because Goryeo compares, like the Mongol Empire, how enormous it was. And Goryeo, we know how small Korea is.
Right.
Goryeo was tiny.
Yeah, yeah. So it's essentially the size of modern day South and North Korea, maybe a little bigger, if I'm remembering correctly. But anyways, yeah, so Goryeo became a semi-autonomous nation of the Mongol Yuan Dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
And so Kublai Khan, he began the custom of marrying off the royal princesses to the Goryeo princes to strengthen the ties between the Yuan Dynasty and the Goryeo kingdom. So it's very political.
I read that he was actually the only ruler ever in the Yuan Dynasty to do that. It was quite unique. No previous Han Chinese emperor had married off their princesses to anyone of the Goryeo dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a pretty smart move by him because, yeah, it did strengthen the ties, not only politically, but now they're blood ties between the Yuan dynasty and the Goryeo kingdom. It was smart for the Goryeo kingdom, I suppose.
Sure, right? Sure. Yeah, so these Goryeo kings married members of the Mongol royalty for over 80 years.
Yeah. It was a long-standing custom. And near the end of those 80 years, this is when Queen Doguk comes in. So who was she? Well, she was a Mongolian princess, and she married King Gongmin of Goryeo. We mentioned this. It was a marriage of convenience, initially. But they ended up becoming very much in love. There's some writings about them that mention just how close they were and how she married him when he was like 21 or 22, very young when he took over the throne. And she played a big role in opening up his mind, politically and culturally speaking. She was to be the link between the Goryeo family and the Yuan dynasty. So she played a very, very important role. And beyond knowing that they were in love, apparently, he even would rely on her and discuss political issues with her, which I actually found to be very interesting and rather refreshing because you think that many marriages of that time would not, the kings would not be reliant on their wife.
Nah, they need to go to the kitchen at that time.
Oh, you'd fit right in.
No, I'm not saying I'm just kidding. I'm just saying that's how it was.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it really was. The women didn't have power, right? They're locked away. But she was his ardent supporter. She always supported him, even to the point that she taught him how to ride horses. She even, it was
that's such
recorded,
a Mongol thing.
I know, right? It's super Mongolian when I read that. But I think it's pretty great. He apparently didn't like horses.
Mm-hmm.
And so she helped him overcome this. It was even mentioned that she once, with a sword, protected the king who was attacked by an assassin. So she risked, you know, life and limb to protect him. After they were married, she had stated she considered herself now a Goryeo person. Goryeo saram, like, she's now, I am part of his family. So it showed that she didn't carry these, like, oh, actually, you know what? I'm going to keep my allegiance over here. It doesn't matter what politically it is. But she really, you know, dedicated herself to him. And due to this and the kind of personality that she was apparently very much loved, obviously, by the king. Now, maybe we should describe King Gongmin. Who was he?
Yeah, so he was a reformist king. He tried to shake off the fading Yuan dynasty. So I believe at this point of his reign, or during his reign, the Yuan dynasty was losing strength.
Yeah.
And so he reigned in the mid-14th century. And during his reign, independence from Yuan dynasty was regained.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Yuan dynasty was crumbling by the incoming Ming dynasty.
I think lots of people have heard Ming dynasty.
Yeah. 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 And so King Gongmin, he tried to remove all of the Mongolian influences and really just regain independence for Korea.
Yeah.
Or Goryeo, rather. So, yeah. So I think he was just sort of cleaning up shop.
Pretty much.
Cleaning up house. Yeah. Doing a little housekeeping work there. Yeah. He removed the pro-Mongolian aristocrats and politicians, just to name a few examples. But pro-Yuan dynasty people would try to kill him because they didn't like his politics.
Well, yeah, at this point, we look at it in retrospect, and we're like, yeah, it makes sense. The kingdom would want independence. They wouldn't you be happy for that? Why would you be pro-Yuan dynasty? But because of these ties with the Yuan dynasty, a lot of them were the ruling classes.
Sure.
They had their own power, their own skin in the game. And so why would they, you know, oh, I have to sacrifice for the Goryeo kingdom, even though I'm Goryeo, but then I have to give up all my power. So there was a lot of internal strife that happened. It was just a very volatile time in history.
I mean, like, for example's sake, it's sort of like, on a much lesser scale, you know, the you know, whenever a political party loses their power, like, for example, now, you know, in the States, the Democrats have the presidential seat and also, you know, the Senate.
Yeah.
You know, and so, like, the Republicans don't like that. They're not cool with that.
Hey, good point.
I'm just saying, yeah, this is just a way to kind of relate. I mean, we're not like shooting each other with arrows and stuff, trying to kill.
Yeah.
Well, at least I don't think we are, you know, the other party. But just to kind of bring a little perspective, just to sort of, you know, understand what they were going through, I guess. Yeah. So anyways, a little bit more about King Gongmin. He was actually considered a great artist, and he was known for his calligraphy.
You can look it up. If you look up King Gongmin paintings and calligraphy, you'll see some nice photos and interesting art.
And another thing was, King Gongmin was painfully aware of the political situation in both Goryeo and outside of it. And also he was aware of the waning Yuan dynasty and also the emergence of the Ming dynasty. Yet he was very alone, and he didn't really have a lot of support and help. But his reformations were blocked by the ruling classes of the Yuan dynasty and the invasions, plus the invasions by other groups.
Yeah, because there was a lot of stuff going on. I mean, when an empire is that huge, dynasty is that big, I imagine that there's going to be fringe groups that you can't really keep a grip on. It's just such a huge empire. And so Goryeo and King Gongmin was fighting so hard for the small kingdom's independence in the face of all this huge stuff that was happening, that was having their own issues with the Ming dynasty now encroaching upon the Yuan dynasty. So it was, you know, at that time, I think people viewed King Gongmin in a very different way than he's viewed now in retrospect. But what happened to Queen Doguk and King Gongmin? So they ruled together. And they were apparently very much in love. But the one thing that they couldn't have was children. And it was very important for the queen to produce an heir, but that didn't happen for them. Finally, after 15 years, she did get pregnant, and apparently King Gongmin was very, very happy. But she died from complications of childbirth in 1365. And this is kind of where everything flipped. This left the king in complete grief, and it was even written that he went insane. He just lost all interest in politics. He handed over his politics to some monk. who later on the king regained his politics from and murdered him. That's a different story. and he painted a portrait of Queen Dokguk, which you can also find online. And he would just look at it day and night. He had no interest whatsoever in what was going on in court. Just like, you know, he was such a pushing forward reformist king. And then when she died, suddenly all of that just turned off. And it was written that he would even sit in front of her portrait. He would eat. He would do, you know, rituals, Buddhist rituals in front of her, and even talk to the portrait. And it was written in these, I guess you would call them annals, right? Historical annals. It says, 밤낮으로 공주를 생각하여 드디어 정신병이 생겼다. Where it was written, day and night, he would just think of the queen, princess, until finally he went insane. And his strange behavior led him to be assassinated by his own bodyguards in 1374. And the sad thing is, I think he, you know, his death was kind of the last straw. And the Goryeo dynasty, which was struggling for its own independence, finally ended after a millennium of existence. And this is when the Joseon dynasty took over.
Mm-hmm. Man, that's so sad, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
I was just thinking how similar I am to King Gongmin.
Because you paint my portraits and cry looking at it day and night.
Yeah, like if I were to lose you, I'd probably go crazy
too.
Oh,
Cooks, don't say that.
And I'll just like start acting strangely and then my homeboys would have to like knock me out because I'm just like crazy.
You're posting like weird YouTube videos where you're pretending to talk to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's sad to think that like, you know, when we look at history, it's really a very brutal and bloody times that have led up to the modern era that we can live in today. And it's weird to think that in the midst of all of that, there could have been a beautiful love story that flourished. It just feels so alien in the middle of all of that cruelty, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the question that people ask is, what if Queen Dokguk had lived longer? She was apparently very significant to him. And when you look through history, and especially in Korean history, you don't see so many rulers who really loved their wife. There are many people who misused their relationships, who controlled them, who used it for political power. But together with her, they had a good relationship and a good ruling, even in the middle of all of this turmoil. So had she lived, would Goryeo have lasted longer? Would the Korean kingdom have emerged and gained its own independence? Would it have become stable? Would it have done more amazing things? Would he have been remembered as a triumphant ruler who brought Goryeo out of an unstable Yuan dynasty? But instead, he is remembered as a king who just went insane, gave up his political power, disgracefully assassinated by his own servants in the final straw that led to the collapse of Goryeo kingdom.
Yeah. So his legacy obviously was potentially altered by, I guess, his behavior. But, you know, who knows how he would have went down in history. I mean, I guess hindsight is obviously different.
Sure.
You know, we could look back and be like, oh, yeah, he, you know, he was pretty influential and cool until he went crazy. But I guess at the time, you know, all you see is like, why is this dude out here like acting crazy?
I know, and, right? You know, look in the middle of this crazy stuff. King, you're supposed to take care of us.
Mm-hmm.
But it's... Man, love really is a powerful thing. So this is a love story that's lost to history. Queen Dokguk and King Gongmin of Goryeo. One last interesting fact is that among the royal tombs that still exist, that still remain from Goryeo kingdom, they are the only one who are buried in a twin royal tomb. They are the only couple that were buried together. So their tomb is considered the most beautiful of the royal tombs that do remain. She supported him until the very end. So it's very interesting to think that this Mongolian queen from a very different clan and culture was married to this small kingdom king in Goryeo dynasty. And their love transcended national boundaries, war, intrigue, ethnicity, politics, and even in death, they are together. The end. Well, I guess that's all we're going to share for this episode. Short and sweet. We hope you guys enjoyed it. We love looking up history and just learning more. And it's interesting to think that there were people in the ruling class in Korea at some time who were mixed of Mongolian and Korean.
Yeah, so that blood ain't as pure as some people might
think. That is also true. Well, anyway, thanks so much for listening, you guys. This episode is only going on podcast, so you won't find it on YouTube, but you are welcome to watch our other episodes on our YouTube channel, The Haffy Project. And if you'd like to get in touch, share your own love stories with us, or tell us about an interesting snippet of Korean history you learned recently, you can always get in touch at thehaffyproject@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. We are The Haffy Project.